few ideas what Shavuos is about, what we're supposed to be going. You know, we all know what Shavuos is, what we do on Shavuos. We stay up, try to stay up, and we sleep for the next couple of days. So we stay up all night and we sleep. That we know. And while we're up all night, it's okay, you know, we learn a little, drink a lot. A good time is had by all. Let's see what we're really supposed to be taking out of Shavuos is other than an all nighter. The Torah says, thank you very much. Wow. Torah says in Parshas Dvarim, Perek Dalet, Posek Lamed Hei. Torah says, "Atah Horeis Aladas Ki Hashem Hu Elokim Eino Movado." Har Sinai, Kodesh Baruch Hu showed Klal Yisrael, "Atah Horeis, you were shown, you have been shown, Hashem Hu Elokim Eino Movado." So Rashi on the spot says, "What does it mean, Atah Horeis Aladas?" So Rashi says, "Kishenasan Kodesh Baruch Hu Zatorah, Posek Lam Zayin Rekiv." Because Rachel opened up seven heavens. Ukishem Shikora is all Yonim Kachoras as Achonim, Vero Uzu Yechidi. The God's name are at the Horeis Lodas. I read this Rashi each year, every year when you might recite it, you read the Rashi. I'm Danny Oslakovskos. And when you read Rashi, you know, I heard once somebody, I think it was Revda, was once giving a shir to some very chashuv avreichim, really hardcore. And he quoted a chazal and said, anybody in the room know where this chazal is? And said, think in Bavli, Yerushalmi, nobody could come up with it. It was Rashi and Hazina. So when, you know, there are certain things that, it's Hazina's a parsha, by the way, so of course, the end of the Torah. So Rashi here says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Ata HaReis Hadas, Kishenasar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah, Pasach and Zayin Rekiyim, Shem Lopin Sam Rekiyim, and just like he opened up the Elyona, he opened up the Tachdona. Okay, you know, I've read that Rashi numerous times. Never really crossed my mind. Okay, if the Torah said Rashi quotes Chazal, then Kodesh Baruch Hu opened up Zayin Rekiyim. So Kodesh Baruch Hu opened up Zayin Rekiyim. That's pretty neat. Come on, really, honestly. What does it mean to open up Zayin Rekiyim? And what are we looking for? What are we being shown over here? So the Klal Yisrael are at Har Sinai, and they see a Gilui of the Zayin Rekiyim. So I saw once a pshat. The pshat is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was showing them a revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, we live with a God. You hear people say all the time, yeah, there's a personal God, there's divine providence. What we call Hashgacha Pratis. There's something we call Hashgacha Pratis. What is Hashgacha Pratis? Hashgacha Pratis is an understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in our day-to-day living. So, and a Jew was what he called it, a Baal Tshuva, was in a Baal Tshuva in one of these groups, Arachim. And they had like, these Israeli Baal Tshuvas. So they had like a shir, and after the shir, these were people who were already Shomer Shabbos. After the shir, one of the Israelis, they served some fruits for dessert, they served some refreshments. So one of the guys takes a piece of watermelon, and he makes a shackle on the watermelon. So the guy takes a couple of bites. The guy says, well, actually, you know, rock on watermelon is actually a dumb one. It's not shako. He says, no, ani ose shako. He says, I know you're ose shako. I heard you. But the bracha on watermelon officially is a bishuli shako. Okay, I'll bite. You know, why bishulcha is it shako? I mean, it's very hard to argue with an Israeli who says bishuli is a kata. I guess, okay, that's kata. They said, why bishulcha is a shako? So he says, he was in the war. Not sure which war, the Kippur war, one of the wars, they were surrounded by Syrian tanks. And he was with a group of guys, and they had a couple of tanks, they're badly outnumbered, and that brings out the best in every Jew. So they said, okay, quickly, you know, we got to daven. We got, you know, there's a bunch of fry kibbutzniks and tanks, didn't know anything. So they said, we got to daven, we got to say, and nobody knew anything. One guy said, I know one thing. He knows how to make a bracha. He says, everybody together, bracha, we got one shot, call the Ebi Dvaro. Boom, knock out a Syrian tank. And again, they all yell, shot, call the Ebi Dvaro, knock out another Syrian tank. He says to the guy, if it's good enough for tanks, it's good enough for watermelon. You can knock out watermelon, you're good enough, we can make a shot call. I can make a shot call on watermelon. Okay, so he can things up on the logic. But at the end of the day, the guy is clear to him you know, the guy is, by the way, the level of ignorance in the country among the, you know, even a prime minister, a prime minister in Israel got up in a public function and said, "En yeled v'medina, shelo makir et ha-pasuk, shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, u'shmo Echad." So, you can't help it. The guy, okay, he knows a shackle. Good enough, they made a shackle. Fine, they made a shackle. What's the point? If you made a shackle, what does it mean? What it really means is, it means that for this individual, he sees at every step in his way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is holding his hand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world to the nth degree. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what we call Hashgacha Pratis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world in a tangible manner. Sometimes you hear people say, people will sometimes use an expression, say something, you know, "Who made your shidduch?" And they'll say, "Oh, it was mamish Hashgacha." Right? "How did you get that job?" "It was mamish Hashgacha." Remember people use that? "It was mamish. I went to the bus stop, and the bus pulled up. Just as I got there, I didn't even have to break stride. It was like a perfect pass. I got to the bus stop, walked over, the bus pulled up. It was a crowded bus, and there was only one seat, you know, that one special seat by the window with nobody near you, and it was open. Everybody's crowded around. Nobody was sitting there. It was mamish Hashgacha." And then you sat there, and you got dripped on, because that's why no one was sitting in the seat. That's also mamish Hashgacha. Oh, that we forgot about. Only the good is Hashgacha. But the expression mamish Hashgacha is actually respects and fear. Because you say, it was mamish Hashgacha. That means there are other things in your life that weren't mamish Hashgacha. The other things out there were random and haphazard. So again, we'll den ourselves a kaskus. So when we say mamish Hashgacha, what we mean is, it was tangibly experienced Hashgacha Pratis. That's what we mean. It was tangibly felt, tangibly experienced Hashgacha Pratis. There's a medrash that says that, by the way, there's a man, a Japanese guy, I don't know his name, he died a couple of years ago, he's 91 years old, a Japanese guy, who on August 6th, 1945 was in a city called Hiroshima. That was a real bad place to be on that particular day. And on August 6, 1945, he was in Hiroshima when it got nuked. And we say, "Oh, got nuked." Like, you know, "got nuked." It's a word in our vocabulary. "Well, just nuke them." You know, well, they got nuked. You know, they really got nuked. I think it was somewhere between 75 and 100,000 people got nuked. This guy survived it. So he decided, he survived a nuclear attack. There are very few people in the world who have survived a nuclear attack. This guy then went, he moved to different, he obviously ran away to a different city very quickly. The different city that he happened to choose was a city called Nagasaki. And Nagasaki got nuked 3 days later, and he was there. So this guy survived two nukes. This guy survived two nukes and died a couple years ago at the age of 91. They had a report in the paper. Now, you know, I don't know why, you know, we should never find out, but at the end of the day, the odds of surviving two nukes are very, very, very slight. So when a person understands that nothing is random and nothing is haphazard, the Medrash, an interesting Medrash, you've probably heard the Medrash, I don't know if you know the explanation of the Medrash. Medrash says that Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta, one of the Tanoim, Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta was once met a Roman matronisa, a Roman noblewoman. She said to him, "Look, your God created the world in 6 days. What's your God been doing since then?" So Yosef ben Chalafta said, "He's been mezavig zivugim. Bas ploni leploni, then ploni leplonis. He's been mezavig zivugim." So this matronisa said, "That's not so hard. I can do it too." And she called in 1,000 of her slaves and 1,000 of her servants. She said, "You're going to marry him, and you're going to marry her, you're going to marry him, you're going to marry her," and she sent them all home. So the next day they came back, the Medrash says, "Dain Moche Petzia, Dain Raglet Tavir." This came back with a fractured skull, this one came back with a broken leg. He said, "I can't stand her," she said, "I can't stand him." They couldn't, there's 1,000 of them. Not one should have worked out. It's interesting, Lashon and Medrash, Lashon and Zohar, I don't know why. It seems the men were the one that got bruised. I don't know why that was. I don't know why they made them differently in those days. So she gets, "Dain Moche Petzia," I checked that Medrash a number of times. It's a Lashon Zohar. "Dain Moche Petzia, Dain Raglet Tavir." So they came back. So then this Roman noble said to Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta, "Wow, I see it's not as easy as I thought. You really have a remarkable God." That's what the Medrash says. Stop and look at the Medrash. Think to yourself, the Medrash, what's going on here? She asked what seems to be a very immature question, which was, "Your God created the world, what's he been doing since then?" What do you mean, what's he been doing since then? What's the Kodesh Baruch Hu been doing since then? You know, Wednesday he golfs, and once in a while it's a tsunami, and he makes trees grow. So what's he been doing since then? What kind of question is it? What's your God been doing since then? And what did Rav Yossi B'Chalaf answer? Mezavig Zivugim. What kind of answer is that? What kind of answer is that? It sounds like his answer is at the same level as ours. What kind of answer is that? So the Mefarshim explained there was a philosophical argument between them. What was the argument? She believed, like everybody else in history, there's a God. Everybody believes a God. Even Paro believes there's a God. Even Paro Melchizedek believes there's a God. What was the quote? What's the issue that people have? Is there what's called a Yudke Valke? Is there what we call Hashgacha? And she said to Yosef ben Chalafta, what's your God? In other words, God created the world, put it into motion, and then he withdrew. And therefore man is Hefker, which is the philosophy of most people in the world. Very few people will deny a creator. Everybody, it's very, very safe to have a creator. But it's annoying to have a creator who makes demands on you. So the way we get around having demands is by denying the fact that there's anything called Hashgacha. He's got nothing to do with the world. Good, we just been mafker ourselves and absolved ourselves of any responsibilities. And that's exactly what she was holding. So Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta picked an example which every single person who ever gets married can relate to. A shidduch, in any shidduch in the world, you ask anybody who made your shidduch, they always got a story for you. It's the stories of shidduchim are unbelievable. Well, you know, I went to somebody's house for Shabbos. I really didn't want to go, but my friend slept me along. And there was a young lady there who was there, and she didn't really want to go, but her friend slept her along. We both realized we're antisocial, so it's just perfect for each other. We got married. Or a guy, what do you call it? I know a couple. A guy went out with over 200 girls.
Wow.
Not yet once. Guy went out with over 200 girls. And a girl went out with over 50 guys. They're both getting a little older. He was about 21. She was 19. And people were getting nervous. And then a Shatan heard about it. So a Shatan matched them up. So the two of them went out. So she calls the girl. She says, what did you think? The girl says, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's not for me. I was bored the entire evening. You know, not for me. So the Shatan says to the girl, well, listen, you know, the boy was enchanted with you. Maybe give it another chance. She says, if it's enchanted, She says, okay, I'll give it another chance. She calls up the boy, says, hey, what do you think? He says, no, definitely not for me. Not my type at all. He says, well, the girl was mesmerized by you. She's absolutely captivated. Couple has 13 children. Right? Couple got married at 13 children. I'm not getting into the question of whether or not a shadchan is allowed to, you know, stretch lie blatantly. I'm going to get into the question of whether or not a shadchan is allowed to simply ignore all facts on the ground and make up a story. That's not the issue. The issue is that in the area of shidduchim, that's more than any other where a person sees hashgacha pratis. A person touches tangibly the presence of a kodesh baruch hu hashgacha pratis. Somebody want to invite him back in? Do you want to invite the bacher back in? What's that? You want to be able to find him? Okay. Find him later. I heard about a guy who went out. A guy went out on a checked the mail. It's like I'm living in Chicago. Chicago in winter is very cold. It's freezing cold days, blizzard, there was ice on the ground all over the place. And the guy went out to check the mail. So on his way out, I said to his wife, I'll be back in a second. I'm going to go check the mail. He went out to the mailbox to check the mail. He slipped, broke his leg in three places, and he had to be put in the hospital for about 3 weeks. And the traction, I don't think. What was amazing was there was no mail that day. It was Memorial Day. There was no mail at all. I remember the guy told me the story. I got the chill. You know, I got the chills. It was a cold day in Chicago, but I got the chills because it was the idea that a guy could go out. So, man, you never know where you're going to be the next moment. You're going out to check the mail. Next thing you know, you end up in a hospital. But there was not even a reason to check the mail. There wasn't a reason. Of course, Roman decides he wanted to take a person and move him around from place to place as a pachat. That the Medrash says in last week's parsha, this week's parsha, the Medrash says that there was a man who had barrels of wine. It says on the pasuk that a person doesn't give the proper tumas and maaseros, so he'll lose money. Somebody gives the tzedakah, gives the matnos kahuna properly, he's going to get rich. somebody doesn't give properly, he's going to lose his money. So the Medrash says, the Medrash Tanchuma says, there's a guy who had the guy wasn't meistering properly. The guy was not giving as much stock as he should. So he wasn't giving the matnas kuhuna the way he should. And the guy had a storage area where he kept his barrels of wine. And so a ruach ra entered him, and he goes into the storage area, and he just started smashing. He took a club, and he smashed up all of his wine. The guy just destroyed all of his wine. So the Medrash says, that's the punishment for not giving the maestros the way you're supposed to. I understand. I had a question. I understand. You ever see that happening nowadays? I mean, how many people go and just go and trash their houses? They just go and smash everything in the house. Nobody does that. Whoever ever hear about somebody who goes around and just smashes everything in his house? All of his properties is broke because he didn't give maestros. So I think to myself, it's interesting. Maybe you don't see that. But sometimes you see people making foolish investments that you do see. Where a guy, mamish, makes an investment, enters into a business, which is mamish a ruach shtus. A guy invests in winter coats for Honolulu, Hawaii. Right? He opens up a factory for winter coats in Honolulu, Hawaii. What were you thinking? Well, I thought there were going to be weather shifts, you know, tsunamis, stuff like that. No, and also the world's not that. What were you, got an angle? The answer is that a guy wants to manipulate things, has no problem manipulating things. He moves people around left and right. That's what we call hashgacha process. He creates a situation to move and manipulate people. There's a medrash that says, Kal Yisrael Yamsuf, when they're crossing Yamsuf, the medrash, you know, we think of Kriyas Yamsuf. What's Kriyas Yamsuf? Yamsuf split, and Kal Yisrael went across, and they went around in 12 different lanes, however you understand the medrash. However you understand the occurrence. There's a medrash that says that a Kriyas Yamsuf, the Yamsuf split one step at a time. It's one step. Can you imagine that? Now, they're in the sea. They got these big walls of water. And it's one thing that it happened. Now it's happening again. And now, I mean, each step you're moving, and it's splitting, and you're splitting. What are you probably thinking? Well, what do you have to do that for? The answer is that Kadosh Baruch Hu is showing you every single step, in case you thought, like the deniers in the Kofrim, they say, well, yeah, the wind blew and the water split. You know, every once in a while, seas split. Well, in case you think that it was a coincidence, even if seas do split once in a while, which none of us have ever seen, I'm not sure exactly which seas they're talking about, but even if seas do split once in a while, I don't know of any seas that split one step at a time as you're walking through. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing you is that in this, what we call life, the sea of life, where a person's moving through, every step of the way is hashgacha. Every step of the way in our life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is leading us through. And that's the first thing Klal Yisrael saw at Har Sinai, is a clear revelation of the Yad Hashem. And each individual needs to understand that in our own life, it's not just something we talk about. It's something that we're doing. We're davening three times a day to make contact. Yeah, you gotta go to davening. You know, davening never comes out at a good time. Stop and think about it. Davening is never at a good time. In the morning, you're tired. At night, you're hungry. And in the afternoon, you're tired and hungry. Right? Davening is never a good time. Right? What's the point of that? Benching is certainly never at a good time. Because you've just eaten a meal. So benching is always difficult. Somebody once said it's a good idea after you bench to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the food too. Because, let's bench. You know, people, I heard them start starting a shul. A guy got up, they dive in Mincha Marit in a shul. They have a Mincha Marit, you know, the Mincha, the Mincha, then a Marit. So there's a rub of the shul, gets up and he gives a 10-minute Musar Shavuos to the Baal Batim during the little break, it's a Mincha Marit. So he gets up. He says, listen, we have to be more focused about it, on Hashem, and we have to think about Hashem, we have to bring Hashem into our life. Only a little old man in the back says, come on, forget about Hashem, let's start diving Marv. So, you know, that's exactly what happens. You know, we got to get Marv done, forget about Hashem. Don't get Hashem confused. Don't get Hashem involved. Let's dive in Marv. So, Adarabba, we're meant to be getting a Kadosh Baruch Hu involved. And what Kal Yisrael were shown at Har Sinai was, they're being shown, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement, they're being shown a clear look at the fact that there's a Shachar process in the world. Chazal say on the Pasuk, it says, Kof Aleim as a Har Kigigis. Everybody knows the Chazal. Gemara says, We're in Brachas, in Shabbos, Bechesed. The Gemara says like this. Vaisyatu v'tachti zar amra avdimi bar choma. Vaisyatu v'tachti zar amra avdimi bar choma bar chasra milame chekofa kodesh baruch hu aleim es ahar kigigis. So Kodesh Baruch held the mountain over guys like a barrel. V'omar lemim te mekablim es haTorah muta, they accept the Torah very good. V'im lav sham teik v'rasim. If not, that's where you're going to be buried. Everybody knows the Gemara. No pasuk. As I said, there's a pasuk of the Yisiyatu Batafi Zohar. And there, Chazal Darshan, Kapalem Zohar Kedikis. I have two questions here. I have two very big questions here. Question number one. Klal Yisrael saw something that no one in history has ever seen. You know, people climb mountains. People climb the top of Everest. People climb K2. And we're called mountain climbers. Sometimes these people get blown away into the abyss if there's a blizzard on the mountain. Sometimes they get lost. Sometimes they freeze to death. It's great fun. It's a hobby. And there are people who go, personally, I play checkers. These people climb mountains. Okay, teach us up. Sometimes. So sometimes they go, they come in. It's not like anybody said you have to. They call it conquering a mountain. It's not like the mountain challenged you. It's like, oh yeah, come on, I'll take you on. The people feel they got to do that. Okay. There's something no mountain climber in history has ever seen, and Klal Yisrael saw it. You know what it was? Klal Yisrael saw the underside of a mountain. Now, think about that. No one in history has ever seen that. So imagine you're looking up right now, and you're wondering, gee, what is that? They never see anything like that. But that's the underside of a mountain. Now, what would your reaction be if you walked up, and I said, hey, what is that? And I said, well, it's just a mountain dangling over your head. Right? What would your reaction be? Oh, Nasa Venishma. We are so Nasa Venishma, you cannot believe it. My favorite two words, Nasa Venishma. Right? Aren't I a Nasa Venishma person? I agree, it's my favorite. That's holy, there's a mountain over you. There's a mountain over you. And looking up, you're seeing the underside of a mountain. Now, I want to ask you a question. You know what an analogy is? An analogy is where you use an example to communicate an idea which is otherwise not understood. So if I say to you, you know what, imagine you're walking, and you walk outside, and a Doberman Pinscher starts chasing you. A dog starts chasing you, and you're running for your life, you make it to your house, you're a step ahead of the dog, you get in, you slam the door, the dog's outside, and you can't even catch your breath. And your brother says to you, what happened? He says, it was terrible, I was being chased by a dog, and he had this unbelievable, it was like a rabbit with teeth, right? I wouldn't say it was like rabbit disease. I'd say, well, I'd be chased by a Doberman. I mean, you know what it was like? It was like a Doberman. That's what it was like. It's very much like a Doberman. That is enough to communicate exactly what happened. So comes along Chazal in their inimitable fashion, and Chazal say, Kof alayim es ahar kigigis. Right, so we're standing, he saw a mountain. You know what the mountain was like? It was like a barrel. Oh, well, come on, big deal. Uh-oh, looks like a barrel. Look out. Honestly, between me and you, if I had a choice to be under a mountain or under a barrel, I'd much rather be under a barrel. Much safer, much better odds under a barrel than under a mountain, number one. So Baruch Hazal tell you, Kof alayim es ahar kigigis. Put them on their mouth like a barrel. I don't need an analogy. If I was writing the Gemara, I would have said, Kof alayim es ahar kahar. And if it would have gone down, they would have gone splat. That's what I would have read. Says Rashi, splat. That's what I would have read. A French word. You know, with what do you call it? Splash in French. And that's what I would have said. What do I need? What do I need? Cup all that was a harkigigis. Like a barrel. Number one. Number two, it says, Im tekablena muta. If you accept it, great. Im lav, shamte furasa. My shamte furasa. What should it say? Pote furasa. Right here, you are going to be crushed by the mountain. So why is it crushed? What's the shamte for us? Two kashas. So I think the pshat is like this. I heard about a guy once, I think two stories. I heard about a couple in L.A. Very wealthy couple, goyim. They decided to commit double suicide. For some reason, they were unhappy. So, that's usually why people commit suicide. So, he got into his Mercedes, and she got into her Lexus, and they made a pact, a suicide pact. They drove around the block, and they came at each other and smashed each other at about 120 miles an hour. Neither of them died because their airbags deployed, and so neither of them died. They couldn't even commit suicide well. So I heard a comedian once said, you know, why, you know, sometimes people try to commit suicide. Hey, they drink a bottle of sleeping pills or they jump off of a roof, and that's something, you know, and it does, they fail. They don't commit suicide, and then they don't try again. So they understand why they would change. Now there's one more thing you're bad at, right? You can't even commit suicide. You know, like, you have even more reason to take two bottles of suicide. What changed you think last time? Or at least you got a reputation of the whole thing. They had there's a mice here in Israel. A woman jumped off the 8th floor of one of those towers in Tel Aviv, and she landed on a mattress truck. There's a mattress truck driving her in on a mattress truck. So you know, we're talking earlier about hashgacha. You know, come on, give me a break. You know, the person can't even die in peace. You know, yeah, because what is manipulated. Just then, the mattress truck came by. You know, he could have a mattress strike. Just then, he had to come by. So you see that now. So stop and think. Why would a couple where he could afford a Mercedes, she could afford a Lexus, they're very wealthy. This story was in the news a couple of years ago. I think it's obviously not very happy. Obviously, something in their well laid out plans of what life is going to give them while they earn and do all the everything else that they're involved with, something went wrong if they both want to die together. And another guy told me, this guy was a guy from Scotland, one of the zaniest individuals I ever met in my life. This guy told me that when he was in high school, he used to have a contest with another guy. They each walked around with a screwdriver, and as soon as nobody was looking, they would unscrew whatever they said. They would just unscrew something, it doesn't matter, and they would collect the screws and count up at the end of the day who had the most. So, you know, it didn't matter. They had no respect. You know, a table, a light fixture, a door handle. He said the school is falling apart. The teacher would come in, sit down, put his elbows on the desk. The desk would go flying off. Light fixture would come in, turn on the light, boom. Everything kept coming off people's hands until they finally figured out. They found him with circumstantial evidence. A screwdriver in one pocket and a pocket full of screws. You know, they had the circumstantial evidence, and they knew that he's the guy to suspect anyway. So I remember the guy told me, so I thought to myself, there are people. Most of you are very young. You're young, so you haven't seen it as much. You've seen some of it, you haven't seen it as much. You get a little older in life, you see people, especially people who made other different life choices than you did. People who decided to live life, be a businessman, go into this field, that field. Look at them down the line. It looks like somebody, every part of their life is falling apart. Their relationships are falling apart. Their personal life is falling apart. They've got no seafood. They've got no satisfaction. Everywhere you touch them, it's loose. It's coming apart. So a person, a guy in a bunker told me his father was a lawyer billing working for a company that billed at $600 an hour. Now, he doesn't get all the money. He only gets some of it. Billing it over $600, that wasn't his main parnassus. His main parnassus was real estate. He told me his father was wealthy. Wealthy with a capital T. Right, his father was wealthy. He said to me, his father's bored. His father's absolutely bored with life. He's bored. He's got nothing. He's got money. Where do I go from here? So his wife suggests he should take a vacation to Bolivia. Because Bolivia, obviously, you know, that's where all satisfaction exists, in Bolivia. So you got to the point where you got to go to Bolivia, you're in trouble. You got to the point where you got to go to Bolivia, then you know you're in trouble. Why do I bring this up? What is Chazal really telling us? Now listen to the lesson of Chazal. Kof Aleihem Zahar Kigigis. You know what that really means? HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the mountain. He held the mountain over Klal Yisrael like it's not a threat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't threatening Klal Yisrael. He was showing Klal Yisrael a gilui of the Metzias. He was telling them the facts. You have a hollowed out mountain. Har Kigigis means the mountain was hollowed out like an inverted barrel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know what? Into Kablena. If you allow me to lower this mountain down over you, and you'll be inside a hollowed out mountain, Mutov, that'll be good for you. It's the best thing that can happen to you. To be put in a hollowed out mountain, in a protective devices of a mountain. If you're underneath the mountain, which is hollowed out, you can't get out, but nothing can get in. Into Kablena, you accept the Torah, with all the limitations and all the impositions and all of the halachas and all of the chumras and all everything, and we look at it and we say to ourselves, you know, another halacha, my right shoe before my left shoe before my right shoe, and I can't even make a borei priya eitz, I can't even make a shackle on water, but all the rules, everywhere you look there's a rule, everywhere you look there's another rule lurking. Yet, look at the results. Look around you at the people who are living like that. Into Kablena Mutov. It's the best thing you can do. Vim lav, you don't want the Torah. You want to go out there. You want that world with all the beauty of that world. Shom tehek v'rasem. That world's going to bury you. You want to go out there. Shom tehek v'rasem. I'm giving you a choice. Not threatening you. I'm giving you a choice. Im tekablenu, the best thing you could possibly do. An optical illusion. That's exactly what we would have thought. You don't want it. You want to go out there. Shom tehek v'rasem. And what happened? What happened in the Purim story? Kimu v'kiblu. Chazal say they were mekabel what they had already been mekabel once before. What did they try to do Purim time? They left the protection of the mountain. What happened? They went out there to join that world. Shom tehek v'rasem. Haman left and buried them. So the Gemara is telling us, a gili of the Metzias. You want the world, that's what we're supposed to be thinking about in Sukkot. Guy told me, there's a guy, I want to bring you a riot, it's a fabulous riot. Somebody pointed this out to me after I told him this. Somebody pointed out to me, again, in Parshas HaZinu, Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Yud, sorry, make it work a little. Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Yud, it says, Yim Seil Beretz Biber of Soli Gilo Yeshimon, Yisodivenu Yivoneneu Yitzrenu Ki Ishon Eno. It says, Yisodivenu Yivoneneu. Rashi says over here, now listen to the context of Rashi, otherwise it don't make any sense. Rashi says, Shom Sivam V'Kifam Ba'anonim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu surrounded Klai Yisrael with the Anonim. What was the function of the Anonim, Rabbosai? They're obviously a protective device for Klai Yisrael. V'Sivam B'Dgolim. He put them in a formation of the Dgolim in four courts to be protected at all points. What was the purpose of the Dgolim? Also, it's a protective function for Klai Yisrael. V'Sivam B'Tachti Sahar Shekafo Alein Kigigis. He put them underneath the mountain, Shekafal and Kigigis. The Pasuk is clearly talking about the context of protection, not threat. That mountain is a protection. If you go inside the mountain, you are protected. You go outside the mountain, you want that world, then you're going to be privy, and you're going to be exposed to all the ugliness, all the vulgarity, and all the emptiness that that world offers, all the frustration that the people are in that world, all the frustration they go through on a regular basis, that's what you have out there. Guy told me, I know this guy personally, guy was fried. He was living in California. He was fried as an egg, as the expression goes. Completely knew nothing of Yiddishkeit. Right? Completely, family was everything but assimilated. They knew absolutely nothing about Yiddishkeit. So this guy was at a very, very fancy private Catholic high school. And one day he's told that the principal, Bishop Garver, this guy's name, tell me this guy's name, Bishop Garver wants to speak to him. I said, see him in the office. This guy was a top student. He walks into the office. He couldn't imagine what the bishop wanted. He never made any trouble. He was great. He's a very brilliant guy. He goes into the office, and Bishop Garver looks at him. He goes, Goldstein, what's the difference between Maimonides and Nachmanides? What we call the Rambam and the Ramban. Goldstein looks and he goes, I haven't the faintest idea. I've never heard of Maimonides, I've never heard of Nachmanides, I'm absolutely clueless. So Bishop Garber reaches down under his desk, he pulls out a translation, the Ramban in English. He says to him, Goldstein, you don't know what you're missing. Go back to your people. He says he was absolutely clueless. He said the guy's world was spinning. Since he doesn't, he was 17 years old, didn't know from the Ramban, doesn't know what a bishop wants from him, nothing. He doesn't know what's happening. He left California, he went to New Square, right? He got involved with the Square Hasidim, somehow they were Makaravim, he hooked up with the Square. From there he went to Baltimore, to an area of Yaakov Weinberg in Baltimore. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's doing some pretty extreme, these are some pretty extreme journeys here. And it came completely from, he told me at his chasna, sitting at the head table was Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, the Sver Rebbe, and Bishop Garber was sitting at the head table over there. He said he had more nachas than anybody at his chasna. Today he's a major force in Kirov in the United States. A major force in Kirov. It takes a goy, a bishop, a principal of a Catholic school, to tell you what you're missing? You think, by the way, if only such a person, oh, such a guy would do it. The other guy either don't know or don't care. So the guy was idealistic. He says, listen, you know, you're not one of us, you're one of them, so go back and be one of them. A guy has to tell a Jew what Klai Yisrael has to offer, what Torah has to offer. So the person, Lawrence, telling you, Tikablena Mutav, it's the best thing you could possibly do. The Imlav Shamtei Kurasa. There's another Gemara, which everybody also mentions, always in connection to Shavuos, and Pesachim, Daf Samach Ches Amud Beis. I'm sure you've heard it, it's probably been quoted. Also want to give you a spin on this Gemara, which perhaps you're not aware of. The Gemara says like this, Rav Yosef, the Yomadat Sarta, Rav Yosef Anatziris, Omar Avdili Igla Tilsa. He used to say, make me an Igla Tilsa. Different opinion whether it's the third calf out of the stomach or if it's a three-year-old calf, whatever it is, it's the best cut of meat. An Igla Tilsa means it's a very, very good, delicious cut of meat, what we, I guess, we call filet mignon. And Rav Yosef and Yomadat Sarta said, I would like you to make me an Igla Tilsa. Omar, he said, Eloha Yoma de Kagarim, if not for this day, Shuas, Hateres, Shuas, not this day, Kama Yosef Ika Bishuka. How many Yosefs there would be out there in the marketplace? If not for Shuas, I got Hakaras, I told to Shuas, and therefore I treat myself the best cut of meat on Shuas. Says Rashi, what do you mean, how many Yosefs there would be out there in the marketplace? Listen to the words of Rashi. Rashi says, Ilava Yoma Shilamareti Torah Vinisramanti. I learned Torah, and as a result, I was elevated. Hare anoshim harbe bashuk shishman Yosef. Many people out in the marketplace named Yosef. Uma beinilu beinam. What difference would there be between me and them? That's what Rashi says. The only difference between us is, I've learned Torah, and they haven't. I'll tell you something shocking. Rabbi Yosef says, what difference would there be between me and them? Anybody know anything unique about Rabbi Yosef? Anything about Rabbi Yosef? Yeah. Rabbi Yosef was blind. Isn't that interesting? Imagine a man sitting in a room and a man's blind. And next to him is a man who could see. And you happen to notice these two individuals. If somebody would say to you, what's the difference between those two people? What do you think the first thing you'd say is? One of them could be wearing a red shirt, one could be wearing a green shirt. But one's blind and one can see. If somebody asks you, what's the difference between those two people? What do you think the first thing you pick up on is? Well, he's blind. And Chazal say a person who's blind is like he's dead. So if Yosef comes over to you and says, well, if not for this day, there are a lot of Yosefs out there. What difference would there be between me and them? What difference would there be between you and them? I got one big difference, Rav Yosef. You're blind and they can see. How's that for a difference? Why don't we start with that? And Rav Yosef says, it's insignificant. You know what the biggest difference is between two people? I learned Torah and they didn't. That's a bigger difference than a person who's blind than a person who can see. Rav Yosef is telling you, if not for this day, that's what created the difference between me and everybody else. So, what does that mean? What does that mean? It means a couple things. I mean, plain level, it means that there's nothing in the world that's like Torah that gives an individual a certain substance in life. Nothing in the world like Torah that gives you a certain meaning, a certain focus. And there's nothing in the world like Torah that gives you a level of growth. Number one. Number two, you know, there's a Rosh Yeshiva. And there's a Yeshiva here in Eretz Yisrael, known for very, very rigid rules. This Yeshiva has very, very strict rules. Any bachur who goes to this yeshiva, silver v'kibel. If you go to this yeshiva, they have a rule, if you miss davening once, you're on probation. You miss a second time, you're gone. You come late, you're on probation. You come late a second time, you're gone. Whatever it is. In the Rosh Yeshiva, it's very, very strict. He's not asking for customers. They come to him. But you come in, silver v'kibel. Just realize what you're getting yourself into. People want to get into this yeshiva. So, one lag va'omer, the Rosh Yeshiva said, no one's allowed to go to Tzas, to Meron. No one's allowed to go to Meron for Agro. But if you do, you're out of Yishuv. Okay. Bachemer, you know, Rashiva never backed down. When he said it, he meant it. The day after Meron, he calls over two guys, two Bachemer. He goes, Reuven, Shimon, I want to speak to you in the office. So two Bachemer go to the office. He says, listen, you were both in Meron last night. You're both out of Yishuv. Pack your bags. Bachemer absolutely jolted. He's just shocked. And so he says to Rashiva, he says, Rebbe, I'm not going to insult you by trying to deny it. You're right, you got us. Just tell us how you knew. He says, I'll tell you exactly how I know. Reuven, you usually come to Shabbos every day 2 minutes late. This morning you were 5 minutes early. You come 4 minutes late, and this morning you were also 5 minutes early. You were obviously compensating for something. You were in Meron. You're out of here. Kama Yosef, Ika Vishuka. You learn a little bit of Torah. This man learned more than a bit. You become a very sharp individual. You become a very sharp person. a very sharp person. Guy once came to us, a bacher in the yeshiva was getting older. This guy was talking, getting older. An older bacher, who besides the fact that he was older, he had a very annoying personality, which may be the reason why he was older. And he was not married. And on top of that, he had an elderly mother. And he made a condition that any girl he marries has to be willing to have the mother live with him. Now, most of you are not married. But you probably understand that that's a really bad idea. So, you know, his friends all said to him, listen, you know, you can't do that. You know, you're not, you know, you're a little older. They're trying to be very delicate about that he's not a prize catch. And on top of it all, you're making it almost impossible for yourself. Why don't you go ask Dastar? She said, okay. So he went to ask Rishon HaZalman, said so. Rishon HaZalman Arba. He goes to Rishon HaZalman, he tells him, if I have to institutionalize my mother because of my wife, I'm never going to be able to appreciate her. I'm always going to resent her. I can't. The guy asked the girl. I mean, a girl with a golden heart. Because we have my mother live with us. And she, whatever. So Zalman says, you're absolutely right. That's the type of girl you should try to find. And I even give you a bracha. You should have a slava. The very next girl he goes out with accepted all of his conditions. Mother can live with them. She has no problem with it. And he gets engaged. Comes back to tell her Shlomo Zalman. He's a chassid. He says, unbelievable, mazel tov, mazel tov, mazel tov. Now you have to institutionalize your mother. You have to put your mother in the home. He says, what? He says, you have to put your mother in the home. You can't have your mother living with you. You're married. You can't have a mother living. He says, yeah, but you said, I know exactly what I said. I said you should find a young lady who's willing to have your mother live with you. And now you found her. And that means she's got a golden heart. But you can't have your mother living with you, and I'm telling you to put her in a home. Understand what that story is? You understand the difference between Kama Yosef Ika Bishusha? You understand what the cook of a gadol is? What his view is on things? His approach to life? That's what Yosef is saying. Kama Yosef Ika Bishusha? What difference is there between me and everybody else? I've learned Torah if they have. There's another chat. And that is, Kama Yosef Ika Bishuka is a reference to himself. If not for Torah, how many Yosefs I would be in the Shuk? You know what that means? It goes back to what we spoke about earlier. You'd be a fragmented personality. You'd be all over the place. Look around you today. You got people who are looking to fill the void. So one day he's into sports, and the next day he's into something else, and the next day he's going to Bolivia, all to try to figure out, he's all over, he's never found an identity. Switches jobs, switches families, switches dogs, switches wives, doesn't matter, he's always trying to find something to switch. Kama Yosef Ika Bishuk, you know why? He does not have that stabilizing force in his life, Shal Torah. And therefore, when I spoke to Rabbi Fried, what should we speak about today? He said, well, you know, what should the boys be thinking about on Shavuos? What do we, you know, we always blame the boys. You know, what should I be thinking about on Shavuos? And the answer is, we got a lot of our Karas HaTov over here. Of course, Rabbi gave us a Torah. Got to sit down on Shavuos, and one time in the course of Shavuos, between pieces of cheesecake, just look up and say, thank you. Say thank you to the Rebbe Shem for giving you a Torah. Because the Torah is a stabilizing factor in your force. It's a stabilizing factor in your life. Without Torah, you are rootless. Without Torah, you wander through life without any meaning, without any purpose. There's only one catch. And that is that the Torah says the pasuk says Roin es hakolos. Paishal saw, they saw the sounds. Why do you have to see the sound? The Netziv says, seeing the sound, you ever see those airplanes that spell out the letters in midair? You know, they spell out, you know, happy birthday, you know, that sort of thing. So the Netziv says that Roinus Akolos, Akolos spelled out letters in midair. Okay, whatever it means, Roinus Akolos, what's the difference between hearing and seeing? The difference is that a person who hears, the sound comes to you. When you hear something, sound waves come to you, your ear picks them up. Seeing means you're going towards it. Roinus Akolos means we're being taught a lesson. You want to get involved with learning? You can't sit in the basement and wait for somebody to come to you. Get me involved. Get me interested. It's boring. I'm not interested in another Migu. I'm not interested in another Chazaka. I've heard enough. You want to get it? You want Torah? You got to get involved. Once you get involved, then there are people who can help you. But rowing as a coach means you've got to be an active participant. Rav Shach Vatzal had a rule. Rav Shach Vatzal had a rule. There were certain times where people would come to Rav Shach. In the yeshiva, he was there for the boys. Made himself hefty for the boys. In his home, he had an hour a day. In his later years, he had an hour or two during the day where people came with all their tzaras and all their problems. Brachas and yeshuas, whatever they needed. The boys weren't allowed to come into Rav Shach to ask Torah questions at that point, because this was for the tzibur, for problems. So one day a boy comes in, comes to Rav Shach, he's got a Gemara with him. He says, Rebbe, I don't understand this thesis. So Rav Shach says to him, listen, Chaim, I'm sorry, but now is time for some trouble for kind of people with troubles. You know, I'm in the base of management. These people have problems, they can really have problems. He says, but Rebbe, this thesis is my problem. Why is my problem any less than anybody else's problem? This is my problem. I'm troubled by this thesis. Shach sat down with the boy. When Rav Shach sat down to learn, you know, that he could have the world waiting, you know, the line waits. And he sat down with the boy, told the boy, and Shach said, because he really wanted, he was going to it. He wasn't waiting for it to come to him. So first understand, rowing as a kolos means you want rowing as a kolos. You've got to go towards it. It requires a little bit of effort. Rabbi Sacher Meir Zatzal, Rabbi Shiva of Yeshivat HaNegev, was nifter a few months back. Rabbi Sacher Meir used to come to Thursday afternoon Seder wearing his Shabbos clothing. He was dressed and showered and ready for Shabbos on Thursday afternoon. You know why? Because he did a mishmar Thursday night, every night. But he didn't do a mishmar like we do a mishmar, which means you learn till 10:30, eat chult, and then stay up till 4 and sleep, you know, doing whatever, and then sleep the rest of the day, and then get to Kabbalah Shabbos. Stagger in, maybe. A mishmar meant he stayed up all night learning. Then he learned all day Friday until he got to Shabbos. Then he went to sleep Friday night. That's a person who's rowing as a kolos. He's moving towards it. Rishmul Berman, I'll tell you one last story. Rishmul Berman was about the Talmud. Rishiva of the Mir Yeshiva was sitting once on a plane. And there's a guy, a former Talmud from the Yeshiva, was sitting in business class or first class, whatever it was. He was sitting in a business van. And for some reason, he had to go back to talk to one of the stewardesses. He goes back into the coach section. And he walks back there and sees there's the Rosh Yeshiva, Rishmul Berman, is sitting there with the Gemara, sitting there in one of the seats. The guy felt terrible. So he says to Rav Shmuel, I feel terrible. He says, Rebbe, I have a seat in first class. You know, here, you, I'll sit here. And Rav Shmuel should go sit in first class. So Rav Shmuel says to him, I don't need a seat in first class. I need a chavrusa. Tell the guy next to me to go sit in first class. You sit down with me. Let's learn. Oh, not what he was expecting. There's an upgrade and there's an upgrade. You got an upgrade to sit next to Rav Shmuel Berman. Yeah, but Rebbe, I'm in the middle of a movie. No, there you go. You got it. Rishul Berman was always learning. You look at a picture of Rishul Berman at every pastor, look at it, there's always an empty seat next to him. Nobody ever sat next to Rishul Berman. Because the minute you sat down, what are you learning? What's Sugya in? What's the Rashba say? He's always, and he was happy with that. That way he's got more room to open up his Gemara. He's got more room on the table. Nobody's bothering him. Rowing as a kolos means you got to go towards the kolos. One last thought. Very quickly, we have to finish. I just want to ask you one question. Everybody knows, because I'll say that the Torah was offered to the B'nai Isha, the Yamun and Moab B'nai Ishma. Everybody knows that Kodesh Baruch Hu offered it to the Goyim first. Said the B'nai Isha, if you want the Torah, what's written in the Torah? You're not allowed to murder. Oh, sorry. Achar b'chatichya. We can't handle a Torah that doesn't allow us to murder. Go to B'nai Amun and B'nai Moab. What's written in the Torah? You're not allowed to be immoral. Are you kidding? We come from immorality. Lot and his daughters. That's our life is immorality. We're in no way. Go to B'nai Shmuel. What's written in the Torah? You can't steal. I mean, can you imagine saying that to an Arab? You can't steal. Are you kidding? Tell me I can't breathe. Don't tell me I can't steal. That's unacceptable. So it says he gave the Torah to Kleister. So the Sfas Emes asks a kasha with this return. Sfas says it's an unbelievable kasha, an easy kasha. He gives an unbelievable answer. Sfas Emes says, Kodesh Baruch Hu turned and gave the Torah to Kleister. Why didn't Klal Yisrael say that Kodesh Baruch Hu, what's written in the Torah? Find out what's written in the Torah. Maybe you want. Why not? Because we'll give Klai Yisrael a test. Because Rosh Hashanah said to Klai Yisrael, you know what says the Torah? You're not allowed to buy wholesale. How's that? What? Are you kidding? You can't compare prices. What? Can you imagine Klai Yisrael? I can't handle it totally yet. Why didn't the Kosher Rebbe give Klai Yisrael a test just like give everybody else a test? So I saw Sassan, it's an unbelievable answer, a very deep answer. It's unbelievable. I didn't see it inside. I heard it in Shane the Sassan. I never found it inside. Doesn't matter. You hear what the Sassan says. It's such a perfect answer for the question. Kosher Rebbe did Klai Yisrael a test. You know what the test was? Kosher Rebbe said to Klai Yisrael, I'm going to give you a Torah. And there's something called Hagabala. You're not allowed to go past a certain point. You have to stay right there. You have to stay there. You're not allowed to go beyond that point. There's an intense revelation of the Shekhinah. And there's nothing a Jew wants more than a connection to the Ribono Shel Olam. There's nothing a Jew wants more than a connection to the Shekhinah. And you're being told, here's Shekhinah, and you can't come any closer. That's the test. Will you be able to restrain yourself and not go beyond that point? That's the test. You know what that means? What that really means? That means every one of us has a she'ifa to grow. Every one of us has a she'ifa to make a connection with the Shekhinah. If we're not doing it, that means we are restraining something which is naturally there. Naturally, we're yearning to move forward. We had to be told, stay back. We're yearning to get closer. If we can't, if we don't, it's only because we're restraining ourselves. Shavuos is a time where we unleash that potential. Shavuos is the time where there's a gilui, 7 rekiim are open, and we see the gilui HaShekhinah, and we're able to make an advance. So we have to say thank you to Ribono Shel Olam for the gift He's given us at a practical level in Olam Hazeh, the gift that He's given us that gives our life in Olam Hazeh more meaning, and we have to use the day in order to think about our commitment. Can we make that commitment, and more solid commitment? Can we remove all those things that are interfering with the natural she'ifa to get closer to Ribono Shel Olam? That's what we're meant to be doing. That's our kavanah.